Welcome to Pod X Medicine, the official podcast of the Academy of Extreme Environment Medicine. I am your host, Sonny Whitfield, and today I have the wonderful Bridgie with me. Bridgie, you've been running around tropical North Queensland.
Tropical as it gets. We've just had Cyclone Narelle come through, actually. It's been quite nice.
How hot is it up there at the moment?
It's actually starting to cool down where it's probably like 31,
That's, yeah, the definition of cooling down there would be lost on a lot of our southern listeners. But you know what? Our guest today is actually, what did you just coin her?
I don't know.
The high fidelity
Oh,
girl.
high fidelity girl. Yeah.
Dr. Molly Cargill's coming from down in Tassie where it is not 31. Molly, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, Sonny. How are you?
I'm great. I noticed that you're in a fleece today.
Yeah, I think it's cooling down for us now here. I think it's about 12 degrees, Bridge.
Our cooling downs are so different.
So still t-shirt weather, but not for much longer. So.
I wore jeans the other day and it was like a little bit hotter than today. And I was like, oh, this is so exciting. And here you are in t-shirts at 12 degrees.
I'm kind of stuck smack bang in the middle of two ladies. So we're at the Gold Coast and it was literally 26 degrees this week, which is that's kind of comfortable. But my kids were running around in hoodies and they're talking about when we can get the fireplace going. So we're going to start chopping wood.
They're
So
ready. Oh, it's hilarious. Miss Molly Cargill, the high fidelity girl. Tell us a bit about yourself and don't skip out on all the fun parts because I know you'll sell yourself short.
thanks, Bridge, the tropical gal. I'm Molly. I'm a doctor currently working in the emergency department at the Royal Hobart Hospital down in Hobart. That's that lovely, sunny, warm Hobart. I am not training in emergency medicine, though, just to make it confusing. I'm training in rural generalist medicine, so through ACRM, and doing ED as my sort of advanced special skill. So that's sort of my technical background. But essentially, I moved down to Tassie because I really just love the outdoors and essentially came down here wanting to do more hiking and trail running, etc. Moved down from grew up in country Victoria and trained in Melbourne, worked in Geelong for a few years and then came down here. I am an expert at taking time off work
Yes, you
and
are.
and not progressing through medicine how most of my other friends and colleagues are. I enjoy taking time off to do big through hikes in the Spanish Pyrenees or tramp around Nepal or essentially just have as much fun as I can. Most of my sort of work in wilderness medicine has been on like ultramarathons in Tassie and also like through a bit of teaching on like advanced wilderness life supports type courses. And just love that environment. But yeah, that's sort of me in a bit of a nutshell. I guess I could say more about how I started wilderness medicine, but I'll let
We'll
you.
get there. That's
Yeah.
next. I love how you said you're an expert at taking time off work. Let's delve into that a little bit. What postgrad year are you? And what would you say? I know you said your other friends, you feel like they're progressing in a different speed. Do you want to explain that to us a little bit, how it works?
So I'm just clocked over into I've worked as a doctor for just gone 5 years now. So I'm in my sixth year now. And essentially, like, you sort of have to work your first 2 years pretty much full time. So, like, internship and PGY two. And then after that, it's a bit of a choose your own adventure. So I feel like most people get on that conveyor belt of medicine, though, and just feel like they have to keep going through and do their exams and get their letters. But there is this big sort of pool of people that once you get to your third year out, you know, it's the typical like locum holiday type year. I've sort of spread that
Spread
across
that
more
over the
years.
last 4 years.
So I still so I like. I've got friends who have saddled their exams and are now just sort of either they're fully qualified GPs or they're advanced trainees in, you know, gastroenterology or that sort of things. I haven't sat an exam yet. I've essentially been like prioritizing just doing like doing what I want to do around sort of wilderness travel, all that sort of thing, with work, obviously, because you got to make money to fund the travels.
Make the money.
Yeah.
I remember one year you said to us something about how you were working for 6 months and then the next 6 months is expedition, then you work for 6 months, then the next 6 months is off. How are you making – so it sounds like you're making the hospital system work for you. Like when you said about the conveyor belt, it's so true. In even in other parts of healthcare, you get – even when you get into the ambulance service, you're in and you just feel like there's no – there's nothing outside of that.
No out. Yeah. I was thinking about – because, yeah, I was thinking about like how can you – balance that sort of wanting to do these cool things outside of the typical hospital system and that. And I think there's like there's two approaches. I know like some people will try and just smash out their training as quickly as they can and then they sort of have you know free rein. I think when I spoke to I was actually chatting to our friend Dan Lack about that. He sort smashed out. Yeah, he's like 3 years of GP training and then that was because he's just like just wanted to get it done and so he could sort of dictate his own time, where my sort of approach has been I guess consciously deprioritizing finishing training or you know doing training and more focusing on like
it sounds like you're focusing on living, and I don't want to be Disneyland about this, but you know, you've described a balance, and I think this is an interesting thing to anchor to, because you know, one of the statements you said with your colleagues is a lot of them have actually moved through their training, and you haven't done the exams yet. They have, you haven't. But if you focus on have-nots, they haven't been to the Pyrenees, or likely haven't, because they've been so focused on what they're doing. They haven't been in Nepal, and I find it interesting, Molly, because like Bridgie said, paramed is extraordinarily similar, where people will finish their degree and then be pressured into a grad year and then pressured into becoming a better paramedic and then pressured into advancing their skill sets. And before they know it, you know, nearly a decade has blown by. And I feel like this is where, well, not even there, I mean, probably before, that's where a lot of burnout in clinical care comes from, is just this pressure. And somehow you've immuned yourself from it. It's like you've bucked the trend.
She's immune.
I definitely still feel the pressure. Like there's some weeks where I'm just like, oh, maybe I will just sign a contract for the rest of the year and tick off all the boxes.
Is that pressure institutional though? It's pressure you put on yourself based on what you've been taught should be normal.
Yeah, and I think it's the more you see people around you like getting to these levels where they're, you know, done or almost done their training.
Are we ever done?
Inverted commas. Yeah, are we ever done? But and then, you know, there's all that like, you know, that pressure to like, because everyone seems to be, you know, I'm at the age where everyone's getting married and buying a house as well, and I'm still like, where's the next holiday? You know, not holiday, but where's the next adventure going to be? And like the way that I approach when I take contracts from work is last year I said to them, I'll work, because we have our year split up into four terms, 3 months each. And I go, okay, I'll work the first 3 months and then I want the second 3 months off and then I'll work the next 3 months and then I want the last 3 months off. And they were like, oh, okay. And then when things
they must look at you like you're mad.
Well, when things didn't eventuate and I have to, and I go, oh, actually, I'll come back a month early because this thing that I wanted to do, like, as you know, things in expedition medicine fall through and whatnot, or you know, plans change. You're always in, I feel like in healthcare, we're always in demand, which is a nice, like you got to remember that, yeah, like we're pretty fortunate that there is always a job out there really for in healthcare. So being able to just, I think, set my terms and then have
slot
them agreed upon and then just be like, oh, actually I'm going to come back a bit earlier they've been very, I mean, I think just my workplace has been very, very flexible and very great, which I think is the nature of living somewhere where there are, like in Tasmania in general, there's so many people who are of a very similar mindset. So I'm probably the more extreme end of one of the free to roam mindset, but yeah, everyone's like pretty understanding. If you want to take time off some leave without pay and go travel, or you've got some fun, like this is where the Antarctic division is for Australia. So everyone sort of, you know, knows about, like, if you get a job on something cool, then there's no real questions asked, which is another benefit. Yeah.
What is the last thing that you went and did while you were on your term off?
Well, whilst you're supposed to be working, let's just...
What did you do while you were supposed to be at work?
My last big trip was, so the GR11 was my last big one. So that was it was 870 kilometres walking across the Spanish Pyrenees. I think there was about 45,000 meters of elevation gain and loss across the 37 days that we did it in. So it was a big slog, and it's it was amazing. And it was just so nice just to, you know, you don't touch your phone, you're just walking, finding somewhere to camp in the mountains, pack up your tent, do it all again. It was beautiful. Definitely a challenge. Like, there was days where it was just like, just want a bed and I want a shower. And but
what was the largest day? 870 kilometers. What was the largest day?
How do you split that up?
The largest day I think was about 37 or 38 k's, but it was elevation wise there was always sort of, I think it averaged out about 1250 meters of elevation a day, and the average walking length per day was 25 k's. So it was like,
it's a distance.
I actually by the end of it, I remember we got to the end and using the old my sharp knife that I've been using along the way to just cut off the calluses off my feet once I got to it was just so
yum. So thick.
Beautiful.
She's got a horn on her foot.
I was going to ask, because these long, these ultra walks, I mean, your feet and the chafe between skin that you just never realised could happen. Two of the pros, I guess, underappreciated issues that you deal with clinically.
Yeah.
You've described one of them in graphic detail. Never borrow Molly's knife if she offers to, you know, do you want me to cut that
cut
orange?
Up some
no.
fruit for you.
I'll clean that, all right?
But how did you go in terms of self-care?
I think it was I hiked with two other friends, one of whom I'd only met for a week beforehand hiking on the Western Arthurs together earlier in the year, but very quickly became friends. And I think we all were really, we acknowledged that, this is going to be long days. We're probably all going to get grumpy and there's going to be times where we get a bit angry at each other or we're going to be tired and frustrated. And it's just nothing's personal. We're all just trying to get through it. We were all a bit mental. We were all sort of we could just do another couple of Ks. So we actually... We didn't end up having any rest days as well. I think our rest day was our 10-kilometer day because one of the girls got gastro, but she still wanted to walk 10 k's. So, it was it was definitely, I think by the end, it was more of a mental challenge. I think physically the body had probably adapted, but it was just, the mental challenge by the end of just the sleep deprivation, because we were trying to sleep in close to 40 degrees. Intense and
there's
nothing like slipping around the mat inside your tent when you roll over, because it's just
snail.
But it's pretty I think it's always pretty wild to think that, because this week is actually the 4-year anniversary of my first ever overnight hike.
Wow.
So, your first ever overnight hike. So hold on. You started your medical training.
Yep.
And 2 years later is your first. Molly, I've seen you do some spectacular walks, over the time that I've known you. You hadn't spent a night outside until medical school.
No. It was actually PGY2. So I was a doctor
Wow.
for a year and a bit before I, and yeah, so in,
I didn't know that.
Really?
I just thought that you got the bug early. Like, she's a country Victoria girl. Yeah. She sleeps outside every week.
No.
So good. You know, we had a nurse team leader go over to Nepal with us and lead a clinical team years ago. And it wasn't, and I mean, her skills and her experiences were up there, but it wasn't until she came back, she'd said, that was interesting for my first night ever in a tent. And I said, wait, what? It was the first time she'd ever slept in a tent. And I was blown away by it. But
it was funny. Like, yeah, and I feel like I didn't tell a lot of people up until recently that I...
That's what she did.
Yeah. Because you're like, oh, people are going to think I'm a fraud, even though I just fell in love with it and did it every weekend or two. But in medical school, well, as a kid, I would sit inside and read books like Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
That's what we were talking about before we started. Evident, yeah, by the fact that I can quote some of the lines. But I would sit inside and I was more of like, I'd read books. We'd go camping as a family, but there wouldn't be any big hiking or anything like that. It'd just be the classic, you know, drive the caravan to wherever and set up the tent. But I realized later in medical school, I sort of stumbled across the fact that you could go to cool places like Antarctica or Nepal and work as a doctor. And I was like, oh, God, that's something I really want to do, because there's nothing, as I was going through medical school, I was like, God, I don't really love one thing enough to do it for the rest of my life. Like, I don't want to just look after the kidneys for the rest of my life. Like, that doesn't really interest me whatsoever. But I was like, oh, this outdoor thing's cool. But I'm like, oh, actually, I probably should see if I like the outdoor environment. And it sort of took me a while, and then COVID happened, so it was a bit hard. And then one of my really good friends, Becky, who's actually now in Cairns Hospital, Bridget, so you might bump into her.
Oh, awesome.
She's one of the surgical doctors.
I don't bump into her. It's a long way from the ED to the surgery part, yeah, isn't it?
She'd come down and see people. But but she was like, oh, I feel like you'd really enjoy hiking. She's had all her own gear. And I, because it was COVID and I was stuck inside, I think I'd been to like the classic like tier one exposure site back in the day where you used to have to sit inside for a week. So I got online, I had a whole week. And I sat down and I just researched and researched and researched and Googled and read blogs and just bought a whole bunch of gear just off the bat and did this one overnight hike. And I was like, with my friend Becky, I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, this is great. And then a few months later, a spot came up in the Overland Track, just a single spot. And so I booked it and just went and did like the 7 days by myself as my second ever.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I was just like, And then from there, I've just done, it's just become like my thing. But that was only, start of 2022.
Do you find, I certainly find walking, it's one of those gifts in life that I think a lot of people underappreciate, especially when you go by yourself, because it just gives you so much peace. And what I've come to, I guess, accept is peaceful thinking. It helps me reflect and unpack. And I think there's a tremendous mental health power to just going for a walk. You know, even if it's a 4-hour walk in the woods or a 4-hour walk in the jungle, it's just, I find it peaceful. Is that something that you think?
Definitely. And like, as much as I love hiking with my friends, but I feel like hiking by yourself is often like, it's very different. And I try and do it like at least once a year, try and do like some sort of multi-day hike, even if it's just an overnighter by myself, because it's just like, I find that sort of, the peace, exactly like you're describing, but just being out there and being entirely alone and just being happy with your own thoughts and own company. I think a lot of people struggle, and not having your phone and not looking at anything and just
and
very
being
much
in nature.
Being present. Yeah.
Like connecting back to nature. And
it's
like that meme that always goes around about like doing my little mental health walk, but you've just taken it to the next step. You're doing your big mental health
work. Yeah, but it was definitely something that I I reckon I've only in the last 12 months sort of been like, oh, like, yeah, I actually only really started doing this when I was like 24. Like, and I'm 28 now and I like, yeah, it's not, but there's definitely that whole like, oh, imposter sort of syndrome-y thing around, oh, like I haven't been doing it that long, but I love it and I do it a lot now. And I think I'd already done one of the wilderness medicine courses before I'd even done the overnight hike. And I remember chatting to the people there and just being like, oh yeah, I really should start doing the health of things. And now it's just like, yeah, it's, I feel like I actually bumped into some family friends that I hadn't seen in 5 or 6 years and talked to them about what I was doing at the moment. And they're like, we would never have picked it. Like absolutely really? Never have picked it for you. Yeah. And I think it just, yeah, like, show you can just pick up something and and if you decide that if you find something you love a bit later on, there's no like, you know, it's not, you're not less of a hiker or less of an outdoors person if you come across it and decide you love it a bit later than everyone else.
Where does that imposter syndrome come from, do you think? Because, you know, someone who's been on such epic walks and experiences, someone who has the courage to literally just gear up and go even independently and by themselves, to me is, look, I don't think there's actually that many experts in the world. I'm very cautious around what I coin a subject matter expert, because I think it's actually just thrown around a little bit. There's a lot of good people who know a lot of good things about, you know, small areas, but experts are, it's a dangerous precedent to place on some people. But You reference imposter syndrome twice, and I think here's someone in front of me who has the courage and the skills to go out and do these things and come back and still feeling like they've got more to learn.
Mm.
Why would that translate to, I don't know what I'm doing? Because someone who can survive 870 kilometers across the Spanish Alps, to me, has a pretty good idea of what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's, yeah, I think it's interesting because I think hiking has become or the outdoors in general has become really popular, and I think a bit more trendy in the last couple of years. Obviously, I'm sure as a effect of social media and people posting the beautiful places on beautiful weather days, but not the
bits in between,
not the bits that you need to do to get there, and not
like
the...
you're like stuck to the side of a rock in the rain, and you're like, I might not survive.
Yeah, or the 2 days you've got to sit in your tent with the rain, you know, because you can't get out, and like,
yeah.
And I think then, like, for good reason, there's like, you know, a lot of people who are worried about the safety of people just suddenly getting out and going. And I think, I found in Tasmania in particular, there's a lot of like gatekeeping almost of like the hikes and the, oh, it's like, don't post this hike because, you know, people want to come here. And there's lots of like, everyone's got, you know, their own idea about how, like, you know, things should be done. And if you don't do it a certain way. So I think sometimes the outdoor community is like as amazing as getting in the outdoors can be and as welcoming as we should be, sometimes there can be like that, like, oh well, if you don't, you know, if you aren't sort of Bob who's 60 years old and been hiking for 40 years in Tassie, like, do you really know it, you know, what, do you even know what you're doing? But I think, yeah, like now that I think at the start it was definitely worse. Now that I've done some more hiking and yeah, I've survived and I think I'm, what am I trying to say? I feel like I should say potato because I can't remember.
She's done it, potato.
Potato. I've lost my train of thought.
Potato.
What was I trying to say?
Like about how
imposter syndrome. Yeah.
How it's gotten better as you've done more.
Yeah.
And maybe as you've, I don't know, is it confidence in yourself that sort of like, or maybe even just like doing it anyway, even though you feel like you shouldn't be sometimes?
Yeah.
I think that gatekeeping comes from a really egotistical place sometimes where, I mean, it should be becoming from a conservative or conservation
place. Of
course. You know, like it's a delicate seesaw, right? Mm-hmm. Years ago, this is when I first left the army. So we're talking early 2010s. I was in the Sinai Peninsula and I was actually just fortunate to join a group that was running camel diving expeditions on the Red Sea. And so we'd literally load up all of these camel trains with,
Camel
we would load.
diving.
So,
How does one dive on a camel?
hear me out, hear me out. You're in the desert, for one. You've got the camel
Where the
trains,
camels are.
and you load the camel trains up with all the diving gear, and you literally
Oh.
walk for 5 or 6 days through the desert, paralleling the Red Sea, and diving in places that no one had ever dived before, right?
So the
And
camels aren't diving.
no, well, they can swim,
Oh, good.
but
Oh.
you've got Bedouin guides taking you. They're navigating by the stars or the coast or whatever they need to do. It was an amazing experience. And if you fast forward 20 years, there's now a multiple lane highway running through that same area,
Oh, that's so
right?
sad.
So that is sad, but with the increase in people, obviously can become environmental destruction, but then also be can become education and conservation. So, although I find it sad, I mean, people should be sad then that Australia has highways running through it because, you know, people used to walk across it. You'll never stop progress. I think people are a little bit immature around that, but we can do it gently and, I guess, more conservatively. But I find the gatekeepers, Molly, so often it's from a place of ego to bring people down. And, you know, like we all love being the expert in something. And like I said, I just don't think there's that many experts. How do you get experience if people won't let you get the experience? I find clinical care the same. There's so many, in quotation, mentors, clinical mentors that want to keep you down. So many of the academics I've worked with in universities want to stay on top of the students who are coming through, whereas I've always been the opposite, where I actually want to raise a student to go above me because that's how the profession develops. That's how we get smarter. And I'm not getting any younger, so I'm not going to try and compete with someone who's younger, faster, and smarter than me, because I'm going to lose. But I think it does have a roll-on effect then to people's not self-confidence, but their perception of their own ability. But sometimes the biggest talkers, like Bob, who's been out there hiking 60 years,
Bloody Bob.
he might have been doing the same thing for 50 years. It's actually the wrong thing.
Exactly. And I feel like there's always that, like when you're starting out, you want to make sure that you're being safe and asking advice and doing the right things. But as you get more confidence, like no one should be telling you that you're doing the wrong thing just because you're not doing it exactly like someone else is
Ollie,
doing
you want to
it.
make sure you're doing it safe. How do you test courage cautiously?
How do
Yeah,
you
how do
test
you,
courage
yeah, how do you do it
cautiously?
safe?
Oof. Well,
Cautious courage. Courageous caution?
I guess what I did, I can only speak from my own experience, but I'm a, I guess that sort of analytical brain. I researched the absolute hell out of where I was going and what I was going to do and looked at all like the past blogs of people that had been to these like the first few hikes that I did sort of more like overland and walls of Jerusalem and things and just made sure that I felt like I was almost sort of overcompensating with all the gear and stuff that I had and I don't think I was ever worried that I was going to be out there by myself, especially on the hikes in Tassie that are so popular, like the Overland where you've got huts and etc. But definitely had a very heavy pack and overcompensated with a lot of very warm, very, backups to backups. And then I think as you just work out what works for you, you're able to adjust that and push things like each time you're sort of going out. Like it's definitely not like I walked the Overland and then 2 weeks later I was like, now I can do the Western Arthurs, which I think is sort of, not the way to think about it. It was like I, did the Overland, did lots of different hiking, slowly sort of upgraded what I was, where I was going, what I was doing. And then once I felt like I was confident enough, like, got some friends together who I knew were also pretty good hikers and then tried the harder stuff like your Western Arthurs and stuff. So I think it's all like, I'm not a, like, there is a certain level of jumping in the deep end, maybe at the start, because you just don't really know what you're doing when it comes to like actually getting there, setting up a tent, getting all your food out. But I feel like it becomes second nature so quickly. And then it's all just about making sure that you, are just being a bit reasonable. Because I think there are a lot of, there's a, like, we've seen, especially in Tasmania, so many deaths really in the last year or two. And the main factor that it comes down to is sort of people who are often not familiar with hiking in Tassie, And so they've come here and they've seen photos of the Western Arthurs and they've gone to do it. And they've, it's like, it's next level. Like even when I did it after doing pretty much all the other hikes in Tassie and then doing some stuff overseas, I did like the Daikoretto in Japan, which is also like a, essentially like Via Ferrata with nowhere to clip in type thing. But the Western Arthurs was
safe.
Yeah, it was great.
Jumping in the deep end though, you know, I think I understand where people come from.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful in how you build your capability. But at the same time, sometimes you've got to leap. And that's when you'll learn, you know, like that the first person to fly a plane had to build it, which means they had to manufacture all of the parts for it and then believe they could do it. And we don't really hear much about the people who failed.
No,
Da
Vinci.
use even the Artemis mission that's on their way to the moon right now.
Yeah.
The first crew that actually left Earth's orbit, although they thought they should be able to return, they weren't convinced. And so the three of those astronauts that were up there, it'd be like the three of us being in a little tiny metal tube 60 years ago and me literally looking at you two going, all right, we're up here. Do I push the button to get us out and see if we can come back or do I not? You know, and so they had to jump in the deep end and leave Earth's orbit for the first time to prove. And I mean, that gives me goosebumps because I think that takes courage. Now, that took a lot of research.
But didn't they die?
No. The only astronauts that we've lost have been on, well, they've been taking off and obviously re-entering the atmosphere and also on the launch pad. There's been three Russian cosmonauts who died on re-entry as well. They were much higher and they are considered, I think, the only three people to be lost in space. But when you actually look at how people gain experience in areas that they've never had it before, sometimes they've just got to take a leap of faith and you will
do it.
You will get criticized for it. You will have people tell you every reason why you shouldn't do it. In a half of the shark diving that I've been involved in the last few years, we get heavily criticized for it because people are genuinely fearful of what we're doing with those beasts, but we're also capturing information that's never been recorded on these beasts before. So we actually just don't understand them. And I think what Molly describes, you know, researching, reading, learning from other people's experience, that's step one. 100%, that's what we need to do. But you know what step two is?
Doing it.
It's having having a crack and going to do it. And we should encourage that, not discourage that.
Yeah.
Because the area of medicine that a lot of us are operating in, although we are professionalizing it through things like AWEMS and AEEM and, you know, there's the WMS, 30 years ago, it was controversial. And 30 years later, a lot of the practices we do is still controversial.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guess if you took some of the things that we're sort of doing to, I don't know, the state board for like health or ambulance or whatever, they'd be like, you what?
Yeah.
You cut what off your foot?
With your orange knife? That was your food preparation knife.
Hey, it was at the end of the hike, not midway through. Although it was tempting.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Sonny. There's definitely like you can't, you know, go and study and get all these like certificates that say, oh yes, I can do these things, like do all your advanced wilderness stuff, and then be like, okay, and then now I'm allowed to go out and do this. There's a certain amount of just, you do have to just put yourself out there. And just, I think there's also like, you just got to accept the risk. There's so much like adversity, you know, people just don't want, so people are so averse to risk nowadays.
Yeah. So risk averse.
Like you, every time you go out, you're like, okay, well, like, you know, things can go wrong. Bad things can happen. And it's very easy to, if you slip here, you hurt yourself and things, you know, and obviously don't always take your PLB and all that sort of thing as a good backup. But you have to accept that nothing, especially in the outdoors, nothing is without risk. And that's part of what you accept to get to those beautiful places and have those experiences. But like, I think there is such that backlash of like, oh, these people went out and they hurt themselves and then they needed the chopper. It's like, well, yeah, that's gonna happen. No matter how prepared you are. So just being like, accepting that risk and being at peace with it, really. And obviously, you know, you do all the things to try and mitigate it. But I think both in like the wilderness, but also in healthcare, we are so averse to risk.
Yeah.
We've become, and then when things do go wrong, that we look for someone to blame, and whether that's we blame the hiker or we blame the the healthcare worker. It's like sometimes we've I think we've forgotten how to accept risk, and I think we've also forgotten how I think fear is another thing that I think is really interesting when you're in an outdoor environment. I was talking about this with my friends when we were doing some of our more sort of dodgy, bit more on the edge type hiking. And there were some sections where you're sweating and you're like, oh God, if this goes wrong, I'm down the bottom of that 200 meter cliff. But also look where I am right now. This is beautiful and amazing. And you think back to some people in their adult lives have never actually experienced true fear around something that could truly, actually go wrong.
Actually hurt you.
Yeah, actually hurt. We have, we are fearful that we'll lose money, or we're fearful that someone's going to break up with us or all that sort of stuff.
Social anxiety.
Yeah, but the actual
anxiety.
Yeah, it's almost I feel like there's a certain level of, no, whether it's healthy,
it's primal.
Primal. To go out and actually experience fear and then acknowledge it and be like, whoa, I'm actually out here doing something that I enjoy, and yes, I'm having this emotion, and this is not something that you feel in your day to day life. And it's we used to probably experience this all the time, as, before. But I think it's something interesting that I think about when I'm in some dodgy, or not dodgy, but in some difficult situations, that sort of, experiencing fear as almost a positive, oh wow, I've really pushed myself. This is,
great. It's that fine line between hero and moron.
It all depends on the outcome, doesn't it?
if you can make it. I remember going on a local hike with one of my good mates from work. And, I mean, he's been a critical care and high acuity paramedic for 20 years. Mm-hmm. We've both been walking in the wilderness. Our experiences, if I'm in a bad situation, I love having Darren next to me. But we knew it was going to be a scramble, and we elected to go light. We had the right shoes, but let's go light. So we didn't actually have rope. And it would have been when we passed this point of no return, where we were both basically hanging on to, for lack of a better expression, a cliff. And I remember Darren looking across to me and just kind of, we didn't say anything to each other. We just both had a mutual understanding that this was the threshold of hero or moron. If we slip, we're going to be morons. If we make it, no one will know, but we're hero to ourselves. And I'm not advocating for this. It was our planning probably could have been a little bit better. But that fear you described, Molly, we both experienced that day, and we got the top. I get goosebumps even now, because it was one of those celebrations our wives will never know about.
Shelley, if you're listening to this.
Without that experience, I feel like the areas where you have the most growth are where you are the most uncomfortable.
The most scared, Because you did it anyway, you did it scared. It's not about doing it and not being scared. It's just doing it anyway.
Or even clinical cases. Clinical cases that challenge you. That's where the most growth happens for a clinician.
Often the mistakes or the things that were really frustrating and difficult, in medicine. And I think the his name's escaping me, but a very famous climber who in Tasmania.
Wasn't Bob.
No. It's going to annoy me that I can't remember his name. But he was climbing the totem pole in Tasmania, and he a rock broke off and hit him in the head. And he was quite injured. But then, after rehabbing, and I think it was a couple of years later, he went back and climbed it again because he only had function of half his body. And everyone's like, oh, weren't you scared? And he's like, well, you just got to do it scared. That's sort of one of his sayings. It's called doing it scared. And I think that's something that I've definitely, I actually think about quite a bit, because it's like I've got a shocking fear of heights. I remember when I did that. But I'm very good at just no one, when I've hiked with my friends, they're like, oh, you weren't scared. And I was like, no, I was terrified.
Yeah, I was scared the whole time.
I just keep a very neutral face. So, you know, when I go really quiet, that's when I'm pooping my pants. But I remember on like the UTAS healthcare and road extreme environments course, I stood on the side of like when you're doing your, you essentially one day you learn how to tie knots and the next day you tie your own anchors and rappel off a cliff, like your abs out down a cliff.
Bit of a steep learning curve.
Oh, I see what you did there. Steep.
But you stand on the side of the cliff and I remember just like people just going like just abs hanging down, like woo, and me just standing there for like a solid 5 minutes going, I know I'm going to be fine. I just like can't actually force my legs to move. And they're like, well, just come back in. I'm like, no, I'm going to do it. And just standing there going, okay. And then I ended up doing it. And I was like, but afterwards I was like, oh, that's, you know, so annoying that it took me forever to actually do it.
But you still then, did it. That's
exactly. And then, you did it. Yeah. And then I think the guy that was teaching at the ropes was like, no, like it means more to like do it scared than to, you know, do it without fear. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
I have far more respect for someone who does things scared than someone who's not scared. And I have far more respect for a clinician that's failed assessments, that's come back and passed, than someone who's coasted through. So, again, I just think that builds character. I think that. Do you think you were more scared of the anchor not holding or not holding?
Yeah, you're like I only learned how to tie this yesterday. No,
it's okay. Someone else tied the anchor and I trusted them. No, and they were all
really?
Checked. Yeah.
Can't tie knots, tie lots.
Yeah. And it was just the well, they checked the anchors, but it's just the knees, you know, the knee jitters that you get when you're just.
That's
and it
so
was just,
funny.
Yeah, it was just standing on the edge of the cliff just going, ah, like I like it was funny because it was like I physically, like I mentally know that I can do this, but I can't get the message down to my legs to keep going. And it just took like it was probably a solid 5 minutes of just standing there going, oh, you're going to be fine. Well, you're being an idiot.
That's 5 minutes on the edge of a cliff, though. Like, good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was way more scary at the top waiting to go over than it
sometimes
was.
Sometimes I have to talk myself into cold water like that. I've got to be like, come on.
Oh, I love
you
cold
know,
water.
It's just water. And then I'll be, I do a little countdown now. Like, I'll just be like 3, 2, 1. Like,
yeah, but
get in.
Cold water for you up in Cairns is 25 degrees. So.
Yeah, I was about to say, where's the cold water?
We don't have cold water here. We are, like when we did the conference in Tassie, beforehand we were up in like Freycinet and we did a few of the hikes there and did like we went swimming in one of the beaches, which is very different to the beaches up here. It was at least you know you're not going to get stung or eaten by a crocodile, which was nice. That's a feeling you don't get off.
You've also offended every single Tasmanian listening because you know a local Tasmanian as opposed to a tourist because none of us can pronounce that place.
What is it? Freycinet.
Molly, help us out.
Just Freycinet. No, she said it right. She's
no,
okay.
No. Okay, I can't say it. I can't.
And you say it wrong. Two of the other girls that were volunteering with us for the conference, Meg and Hannah, like had to pretty much force me in there. But afterwards it was awesome.
Did you go slow or did you go quick?
Well, see, I was going slow and they were like, nah, this is not how to do it. Just get in.
Oh, I feel like you've got to go slow.
Well, I was going slow and I think it was making it worse because it was giving me more time to talk myself out of it. Almost.
But you did it anyway, Bridget.
But I did it anyway. Yeah. And I froze my absolute butt off. But it was a good nervous system reset before the conference. I was like, well, if I'm going to get up in front of a bunch of people with the microphone, I can get in some cold water.
Molly, you had the information, you had the practice on setting the anchors and tying knots. You're still nervous going over the edge. Yep. We've got the skills, we've got the abilities with clinical care. Sometimes we're still challenged. It's interesting because I remember when I first started skydiving years ago, I would refuse to pack my own chute. I wanted someone else to pack my chute. And it wasn't until I'd moved past about 50 jumps that it flipped. And I was no longer comfortable with someone else packing my chute. I would have to pack my own to feel safe. And I was always really amused and intrigued by that flip because it was almost like 1 minute I wanted someone else to pack my chute and the next minute I'm like, no
That's
way, I'm
chute.
About I'm jumping out of this. I want to know it's packed properly. That flip, I don't know if you'd bring it down to experience, or experience with ego, or experience with stupidity, or what you'd bring it down to. But have you rappelled off a cliff since?
I not only indoors, so I'd like it's I've done it a lot more indoors, so I guess I'm not tying my own anchors there. But I still get that, like, that jolt of fear every time I get to the top of a wall, and then you just kick off, especially on the auto belays. But yeah, no, I think it will probably take me a very long time to be completely at ease. I don't know if I'll ever be at ease with like just rappelling off a cliff. I think there's still inside me, there's still like that very like reserved indoorsy, like, no, it's like a core of like, oh God, I could just, like, this isn't, what are you doing, you idiot? Like, this isn't you. I think, but I still really enjoy, like, I think I enjoy the things that challenge me more than I enjoy the things that are just easy and comfortable. And yeah, it's nice to do things that are easy and comfortable, but I think that's why I keep going on different crazy hikes and trying new skills. Like, I'm gonna go look at, I want to buy a pack raft. That's my next thing. I
No,
want to
really.
yeah, or like a sea kayak or something like that. Like, I
Cool.
and then just, yeah, there's too many things on my list that I'm like, okay, like, I'm, ticking through different things that I'm doing, and yeah, like, want to do more outdoor climbing and get comfortable with doing all that sort of stuff. But I know it's gonna like challenge me, and probably I'll be scared and frightened at sometimes. But just, yeah, like, I can't wait to do
I'm all about the sea kayak because it's a whole new skill. I watched Shelley and I
Yeah.
watched a it was the Ocean Film Festival last year or year before, and there were two girls who they basically mapped this epic sea kayak through the east coast of Canada through all these islands, but they did the
Wow.
entire thing completely sustainably. So
That's
there was
incredible.
no plastic, there was no waste. They had to pack food for 30 days and somehow preserve it without using, plastic to seal their food in. It's an
Wow.
amazing story. I wish I could remember it, but it, when you take on a new element like that or a new skill, I just think it broadens your horizons. I mean, the pack rafting is also awesome, but the sea kayak can just take you places that your legs never can.
Yeah, there's too many. I feel like I move around. Actually, I'm moving house yesterday and today. After this, I'm gonna come and keep moving, but I realize how many hobbies I have when I have to move house, and I go, oh yep, take the bike across, and take the all the I've got two packs and three tents now, and it's all like, yeah. And so yeah, the sea kayaking, I think I, yeah, definitely want to add it to the list. I've just got to work out where to
Put
put
it
it,
on
and
top of the
then
car.
But
Bridgie, one of the things you said earlier in the podcast to Molly was about balance. We talked about that she's an expert in taking time off work. Which I love. I feel like we need to coin that. And she's now,
resonates with me too.
there's very few experts in the world, but Molly is going to be the expert at taking time off work. And the balance that we described is, I guess, attempting to find a balance between your professional responsibility and also your responsibility to yourself or your personal responsibility. I think she's striking a reasonably good balance here, but it's not going to be without criticism because there's an expectation of a career path, a linear career path that, I guess a lot of us involved in this are accustomed to not taking. But then there's the flip side to that balance too, where there are some people who will steamroll through the course that Molly's doing while still taking, I guess, micro adventures. And I think an acknowledgement of that there's no one way. There's no, like when people try and give people career advice, sometimes I cringe because I think, because it worked for me doesn't mean it will work for you. And so I think that we've got to have an acknowledgement too that, the journey that Molly's on, the journey that you're on, I mean, the journey you're on, Bridgie, I would never do right now. Taking
I'm
myself back to
kind of
medical
confused
school.
as to why I'm
Oh,
doing it
respect, sister,
too. You could
respect.
have warned me, Molly, about this.
Molly?
Well, look,
Yeah.
everyone,
Yeah.
you know what, Bridget? It's worth it in the
Great.
end. No,
That's
it's
that she's
gonna be
taking another week
fine.
off.
Look, once you get to the point where you can just take 6 months of the year off, it's
I'm
great.
just memorizing like the glycolysis pathway at the moment.
I've forgotten
and
that, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't need it good. And it's just, but at the same time, I feel like whilst I'm like seeing everyone doing these awesome adventures and I'm sort of, I've got mandatory class, so I'm here. I'm in such a beautiful spot in Cairns near all these mountains and I'm getting challenged mentally again. And I think that's the big thing for me is before I was just working at any station I could, doing single officer stuff or doing this, doing that, trying to find a challenge for my brain almost. And so now it does feel good to be challenged.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it's not in the physical way, you know, at least I'm getting challenged again.
Yeah. And I feel like there is always going to be a time, like I will have to probably next year, although I say that each year, I will have to.
I was going to gonna say, I've heard you say this every year for the last like 3 years.
Probably next year, like actually, you know, lock, sit down and do 12 months of full-time work.
What
and
is
do
that?
Some exams. Because like there is, unfortunately, there is a limit on how long I can be in my training course for before I need to actually do those sorts of things. And I know during that time, I'm going to be like, oh, everyone's doing these fun things. And like, it is like, there are going to be times where you've got to like actually be like, okay, no, like I'm doing this now because I need to do it. And then like I've done fun things before, I'll do fun things again. But like, you know, got to be happy with those, like the small like weekend or, you know, week long adventures when you can take them. But
chapters, it's all about chapters,
yeah.
Molly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think having those experiences to reminisce on too, they help you through those harder times when you've got to focus on one thing. And get it done. So, hey, Molly, can I put you on the spot before we wrap up?
Yeah,
we always
sure.
ask for a pearl of wisdom from the guest.
A pearl.
A pearl of wisdom.
There's a lot of listeners out there that, you know, they're experienced in this area. There's also a lot of who aren't experienced in this area. There are some that are considering going from paramedical nursing to medicine. There's others.
Yeah.
There's so
Don't
many different
it.
People. So your pearl of wisdom.
No, do it.
My pearl of wisdom. I think don't limit yourself by what you think that you're capable of. What Bob thinks you're capable of. I think you actually have no idea what you can do or what you enjoy until you go out there and actually just do it. So just do it, like Nike. Just do it. Is that what Nike's like? No, I can't. I can't coin that. That's probably some sort of trademark.
Yeah.
But honestly, like just it took me. I feel like I was thinking about hiking and doing outdoor things 2 years before I finally did it, and now I'm just in love with it. So, and I think you're always gonna have self doubts and. Maybe internally there's going to be voices telling you that you can't do things, or externally, you know, the Bob and, you know, all the people on the hiking websites that are tell you that you need to do X, Y, and Z. But I think if you just do it, try it, and yeah, you may just completely pivot your whole life, which I feel like I've done in the past 4 or 5 years. It's all, yeah, it's, you never know. So.
That is Dr. Molly Cargill, the expert at taking time off work.
Is that going to be the title?
Yeah.
I think it needs to be, folks. That is Pod X Medicine with Dr. Molly Cargill. If you like what you hear, jump on the website, academyx.com.au. Thanks again, Molly, for being here.
Thanks so much, Sunny. Thanks, Bridge.
Thanks, Mol.